Garden for Life comes your way once a month here on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Jackson County Master Gardener Extraordinaire Lynn Kuntzman. Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
Well, we're definitely in kind of a transition season now because we're pulling things out of our gardens in the hot weather and then also having to think about what's coming up next. Now, to the harvest part of it, gardens can really surprise you this time of year. Just a couple of days ago, I went out and I went to pull some strawberries and kept pulling and pulling and pulling, and I ended up with almost more than I knew what to do with.
Right. Yeah. So everything is really taken off now in the heat and after that cold kind of June. And then, stuff's producing. The tomatoes are coming out. The zucchini is burying all of us. And, you know, everything is popping. We've even gotten corn out of our garden. So, it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, the zucchini stuff is really funny. I was thinking about you the other day in the grocery store because I passed by a zucchini for sale, and I thought people need to actually buy zucchini this time of year.
I know. How is that even possible, right?
Right.
How do the grocery stores even sell them this time of year?
Yeah. What is it with the zucchinis and the other members of the squash family? Because that's the other thing I got just going gangbusters in my garden is that the yellow squash is just going crazy. Can't keep up with it.
Yeah, right. The summer squash, the patty pans, the yellow squash, the crooknecks, the all those summer squash are just really prolific, and they just pump stuff out continuously. And people, tend to plant way too many of them, and and then they've got way more than they want, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why the summer squash are that, fast producing. They're just different from the winter squash, which tend to be more viney and slower to put on fruit.
Mm-hmm. As we've talked about in the past, the squash family is a bit promiscuous, isn't it? I mean, if you put different kinds of squash in your garden, you could end up with some interesting hybrids, can't you?
Yeah. No, you never save seed from your squash because they will just have fun with anybody. And so you don't want to get a zumpkin or a puccini or it's a weird thing. Weird things happen when the seeds, they do not come true from seed. So you always want to buy from a reliable vendor who, keeps their fields separated and keeps the seed pure. Yeah.
What was the other term? Zumpkin, was it?
Yeah, zumpkin.
Zumpkin and puccini.
And puccini, yeah.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, yummy.
So when we get to this part of the year when it is that hot, and we've talked in the past about, plants have trouble setting fruit, they're going to slow down when it gets super hot. Should we consider anything about changing, if not the timing, the approach to watering? I mean, you've talked about watering from overhead. I water from a sprinkle strip down below.
Right.
Do you think about changing those sorts of things when it's really hot?
Because I water in the morning, it's not an issue for me. Things cool down. It's 59 degrees this morning when I got up. And so my sprinkler's coming on at 4 in the morning, which is, the right time, in my opinion, to water, when you've got the least evaporation occurring from the soil, that's when you want to lay the water down. So for me, it's not a big issue, although... I've noticed in my garden a lot more pests this year because I guess we had a mild winter and some of them didn't get frozen out the way they normally do. And so, and I think putting mulch down just encouraged a lot of pest activity. And so I've actually been thinking about going to hand watering now rather than doing overhead just for a few weeks to see if I can reduce the pest load in my garden. But I don't know if that's unique to me or if other people are seeing those kinds of things.
Lots of earwigs and ants this year.
Lots of earwigs, lots of slugs, lots of stink bugs in my yard, and they just almost ruined my peach crop, which they've never done before. I've never had that problem. So I'm just seeing a lot more insect activity. Maybe that's a sign that my garden is, producing the pests, and hopefully it will continue to evolve and start producing the predators for those pests. That's the hope.
Yeah, you want the whole cycle to be working out there.
Right, to be patient and wait for the predators to kind of catch up to the explosion of the pest population. Anyway.
Yeah, I use the tuna can trap with the earwigs this year, and it worked like a charm. It was a disgusting charm, but a charm.
It is a disgusting charm, for sure, yeah. It's like thousands of bodies in the soy sauce.
Yeah. Oil and soy sauce in a tuna can, and it works disgustingly well. This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Lynn Kunzman, Jackson County Master Gardener. Let's see, you mentioned time of day. You water at 4 in the morning. I water a little closer to sunrise. You really want to, that's not a danger that things are going to get moldy if you water when it's still dark?
No, uh-uh. I mean, not with the way things are so dry. You know, the atmosphere is really dry, so I'm not concerned. If we were in a more humid environment, it might be an issue if I was overhead watering, because then mold spores could stay longer. But I've never had an issue with, you know, mildews or molds or those kinds of things. That's a new fun thing I could look forward to.
Oh, yeah, really? Yeah, I'm not encouraging that at all.
We've never had a problem watering at 4 or 5. You know, I've got two banks, and so one goes at 4 and the other one goes at 5, or one goes at 4:30, the other one goes at 5. Mm-hmm. But it's early. It's before the sun comes up, so yeah. I don't want, you know, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I do mine right around 6, between 6 and 7, I think, yeah. So
that's fine. Yep. Yeah, okay. That works.
All right.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about, we talked about pests a bit, but there was one thing you wanted to talk about specifically this time, which jumped out at you as a topic worthy of discussion, and it's one we talked about years ago on the exchange, which is the encroachment of Asian jumping worms.
Yes,
as opposed to
literally jumped out at me. Yes, I mulched my garden a little too early this year because it was cool and I hadn't waited for the soil to really warm up, and then I was pulling back the mulch to plant some new things in a space I had available, and these things the size of pencils came leaping out of the ground and flipping away from me. At first, I thought it was a small snake.
Uh-huh.
And no, it was an Asian jumping worm, which I then reported to our invasive species site, the state invasive species site. And they said, yeah, they've been here since 2015. They're around. But I had never seen them in my yard. Mm-hmm. And they're really quite repulsive. And they eat all of the mulch that you put down. They're detritus feeders.
They're like bottomless pits.
They are like bottomless pits, and they go through the mulch really fast, and they only live in the top 2 inches of soil, and then they turn the soil, they really mess the soil up in terms of its crumb texture,
mm-hmm.
so that water has trouble percolating, and they cause all kinds of weird problems. Yeah, the way you tell that it's a jumping worm, number one, it's going to wiggle really fast, but not like the red wigglers in your compost. But it has the reproductive structure on it, which is called a clitellum, is flat against the body, and it's white or cream colored. So most of our other earthworms that we have from Europe have a red clitellum, or it's the same color as their body,
mm-hmm.
and it's raised a little bit. But on the jumping worms, it's flush with the body, and it's very clearly a lighter color than the worm itself. And that's how you tell you've got them.
Well, if they move that fast, though, I mean, it sounds like it's a little hard to take a look at the clitellum.
It is. Well, I grab them and throw them in I have a little bucket with me, you know, and I toss them in the bucket, and then I can examine them or take a video or whatever. But yeah, they're so fast, and they'll shoot, you know, down an inch into the soil away from you as quickly as they can. They also have a very grotesque kind of mouth part that helps them move fast through the environment and eat everything they encounter.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow. Yeah, so the danger is they're changing the ecosystem around us.
It is changing the ecosystem. It's not, you know, in the West, it's not as bad a problem. In the East, where we have deciduous forests that drop their leaves and the nuts and seeds that fall from those trees require that mulch layer to be able to germinate. They can't be exposed to the light. Well, the earthworms are clearing the forest floor, and then nothing can germinate. So the forests are just like denuded, And it's a real problem in the Midwest and the eastern part of the country.
So what do we do if we think we have Asian jumping worms with us? What do we do with them? And what do we call?
Yeah. Well, you could not mulch your garden, which means you're going to have to apply more water, obviously, because they have to have a mulch layer to feed on. You can, in some instances, if you have open beds, you could solarize. If you can put down black plastic for a while and get the soil up to 105 degrees, that'll bake them.
Because they live in the top 2 inches. Yeah, won't
affect
the natives.
Because they're right there. They're right there at the surface. But you have to get it up, for a period of time, that hot, hot temperature, which means you've given up part of your garden space. Well, most of us have gardens where, you can't just lay plastic out over your entire growing area and deal with it. So really, they're kind of here, and we need to. The other thing was make a hot mustard water infusion and put a gallon of it per square foot of the garden space. Well, again, how many of us?
Yeah, a gallon of square foot. Wow.
I've got a 75 by 50 foot garden. Uh-huh. I can't.
Yeah.
Do that. So, I'm just kind of living with them and thinking I'll wait to put the mulch down till later in the year next time. And, maybe do some hand watering so things aren't quite as moist and wonderful for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So just change the setting for them.
Yeah.
Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley with Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners. Just a few minutes left here to talk about the other part of this time of year, which is thinking about the next things to grow. And it brings me back to a question I know I've asked before, but do we need to let parts of our garden rest? I mean, if we, take out the cucumbers, is the next thing going? No rest.
No. When you open up real estate in your garden, the best thing you can do when you open up real estate in your garden, because you've taken out the corn or you've taken out your lettuce and now you've got a space, is to put the next thing that would be coming up. And a lot of plants tell you if they're seeding, if the lettuce is seeding, you let one of your lettuce plants go to seed, it's going to drop its seed. It means it's time to plant lettuce, right? Let it grow. So there are all kinds of things that you can be seeding this time of year if you don't have the pest problem I have, or you can seed them in flats. I recommend you do that in a shaded area, starting your seeds so that they're not out in this baking 100-degree sun. You've got to keep them wet this time of year, but you can have them in dappled shade and raise them on a patio table or something like that.
Right. They don't have to be inside because it's not cold.
They don't have to be inside. They don't have to be in the house. I could put them in my greenhouse. I've got a shade cloth on it, and I could grow them in there. All the fall and winter vegetables, it's time to start getting them ready to grow as transplants to put out in late September, in your garden. And then lots of things that you can seed. I'm seeding lettuce and dill. Some people seed another crop of zucchini, believe it or not, in the middle of your first plant, cucumbers too, because your first plants get spent, and then the crop stops. So if you in mid July or early August you plant some more of those, you have time now with our extended growing season in the fall to collect some more cucumbers or whatever. So those are things people could do. But definitely things like onions, lettuce, mustard, greens, peas. I put peas out, and we put up from the thrift store. We hung old lace curtains over them to give them a shady, dappled light, so they weren't out in the 100, because peas don't really like 100-degree weather, but they like it warm. They're fine. So they're out there, and the curtains are blowing in the breeze and covering the peas.
Just about a minute left here. I want to make sure that we preview that coming up next month, we'll be talking about this again in early September, but you got a native plant sale coming up in September.
Right, the last Saturday in September from 9 to 2 at the Extension Service. So we'll be selling native plants. Oh, and several food plants as well. I've got, grapes. I've got a lot of grape varieties that'll be for sale. Those are not native, but they're food plants. So, I do that.
Okay.
So yeah, that would be great if people came out if they want native plants, because fall is the best time to put natives in the ground.
Okay, we got a lot more on that when we talk to you in early September. That'll do it for August edition of Garden for Life with Lynn Kunzman from Jackson County Master Gardeners. Lynn, always a pleasure to have you.
Lots of fun. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening.